And we will move along to the seventh case, Huang against Gonzalez.
Good morning, Your Honors. Benjamin here is an attorney for the petitioner, Kailong Wang. This matter is before you, Your Honors, on appeal from an immigration agency case in which the immigration judge denied the petitioner's application for asylum. Based on political belief. We are of the position that this matter should be reversed and or remanded consistent with any favorable ruling we may secure. In the instant matter, Your Honors, the IJ misapplied the corroboration rule contrary to what is required as held in Goncharova, a case that was decided in this circuit. In that the immigration judge made no explicit credibility finding. He made no explanation as to why additional corroboration was necessary. And as well, and finally, he did not give an account of why the applicant's explanation for not producing that corroboration was not adequate. Going on to discuss what actually happened in the immigration court stage of this litigation, the immigration judge's oral decision was unsupported by the record. He made reference to an allegation that the petitioner did not submit any corroborating evidence, but for the State Department report that apparently was actually submitted by the appellee, or was just a matter of the administrative record, or rather part of the content of the administrative record. The petitioner's claim was based on his participation in the Tiananmen Square demonstrations of 1989.
Actually, wasn't it demonstrations in another city in support of what was going on in Tiananmen?
Well, yes, Your Honor, but I consider those sort of one of the same.
Okay.
And he said that the State Department reports, the country reports on human conditions in China, did not make any mention whatsoever of any persecution of members or participants or protesters in terms of the Tiananmen Square demonstrations. Well, in fact, there is numerous reference to persecution of leaders, participants, and other individuals in protest of the Tiananmen Square demonstrations. The administrative record, page 124, the administrative record, pages 130 and 131, are but just a few examples of the country reports actually covering persecution that has taken place in Tiananmen Square, or rather pursuant to the Tiananmen Square demonstrations. The defendant was, petitioner was arrested in 1989 as a 15-year-old, and because he had flyers that actually promoted the demonstrations that were related to Tiananmen Square or that were taking place in Beijing. He was taken into custody, interrogated. He was beaten. His forehead and jaw were bleeding. He wasn't released for a whole month. This is just a 15-year-old. I don't see how this would not rise to a subjective, genuine fear of persecution, as well as an objective one, in terms of the country reports on human rights conditions in China, coupled with the fact that a 15-year-old was beaten until he was bleeding, as well.
The immigration judge makes no particular mention of that, right?
No, he doesn't. No, he does not, apparently.
We don't know if the immigration judge believes or disbelieves that this happened.
Right, Your Honor, and that goes to the whole fact that there was no explicit credibility finding. And this is contrary to the stare decisis within this circuit pursuant to Goncharova. As well, we've got some ancillary issues going to CAT, as well as constructive deportation, as well as the stop time rule. And counsel may argue that one incident does not rise to the level of persecution, but according to CAT, according to Metev, also decided in this circuit, according to Bezatowski, that is not true. That is simply false. Any questions, Your Honors?
No, if you'd like to save the rest of your time for rebuttal,
certainly,
that would be fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Andre?
Good morning. May it please the Court, John Andre for the respondent. We do take the position that the incident in 1989 in connection with the Tiananmen Square protests did not rise to the level of persecution.
But, you know, the problem, of course, Mr. Andre, that you face is that, unfortunately, you are not the immigration judge. Your job as appellate counsel,
yes,
is to glean from the immigration judge's opinion something that you can defend. And this immigration judge never makes an explicit credibility finding, never decides whether or not there's past persecution. Obviously, as you well know, if there is past persecution, then there's a presumption of future. If there's not past persecution, then the person still has the opportunity to show a well-founded fear of future persecution. This is about as, not only is it a brief consideration of Mr. Huang's petition, but it's actually inaccurate in important respects. The judge seems to think that the documents were undated. They aren't, as you note in your brief. They're dated. He seems to think that there's something wrong about the fact that the government may have put the State Department reports into the record as opposed to petitioner, but who cares? You know, if they're in the record, they're in the record. And then suddenly you get to this paragraph that says, accordingly, and for the foregoing reasons, which are these paragraphs 1, 2, and 3, we're denying. I mean, it's just that we have very, other than your arguments, and perhaps you looking at the underlying evidence might have been able to write a much better, or dictate, you know, as the case may be, a much better opinion. But we have nothing here.
Well, I would respectfully
except
disagree.
Except inaccurate things like undated documents.
With due respect, I would disagree that our position is that the immigration judge's decision is complete enough to let the court know what the basis of the reasoning was.
How do we know whether the judge thought, I mean, you know, I don't even know what this judge thinks persecution would be.
Well,
to be honest, I worry about that because of, you know, this national discussion we're having about torture and persecution and all sorts of things. It seems precision is a really good idea.
Precision is important, and perhaps other judges or other cases there may be a more complete decision. But again, I think based on what the judge has said, I think it's pretty clear that we can glean from the immigration judge's decision that we know that there was no credibility finding, so for purposes of credibility, I think we can assume that the judge considered him to be credible with respect to the past incident.
All right, so if he's credible and he is kept over a substantial period of time during which he's interrogated, repeatedly kicked and beaten for an entire month, and then expelled from school. Why is that okay?
That's not, as you describe it, Judge Wood, it's not okay.
Well, I'm looking at the bottom of page 2 of the immigration judge's opinion. There's the May 18, 1989 student protest. Approximately 6 days later, a similar demonstration. Then June 3rd, another one. It was after the June 3rd one that he was arrested by public security officers. During the course of his subsequent interrogations, he was repeatedly kicked and beaten. He testified that he was released after 1 month for unknown reasons. At that point, he's expelled from school and blacklisted. That's what I'm looking at. And if we're supposed to believe all of that, as you just said.
In the record, there was only one incident of beating, which resulted in the injury where he claims that he had an injury to his jaw. And
now you're going back to the record, though, because if the immigration judge's account of repeatedly being kicked and beaten is the one that we're supposed to believe, why isn't that persecution?
Well, again, I don't think the record is really accurately reflected in the judge's decision to the extent that he says he was repeatedly kicked and beaten. There was only one incident of beating, and this court's precedent decisions have, many of them have, in fact, found no sufficient severity of persecution when somebody was beaten once.
Why should we consider this a one beating case, though, when that's not, you know, it's just, why would it be so harmful to send this back and ask the immigration judge to do it right?
Well, again,
the new law, I think, puts a real premium on clear findings of credibility, clear findings about availability of corroborating evidence, and if the immigration judges will do their job, we can do ours.
If I may. The reason why it would not make sense to send it back is because the result would be the same. And impose particular reticulation requirements on this particular decision, the result would be the same. He did not suffer past persecution. It was not severe enough. This is an incident that occurred 15 years ago, and he did not require medical treatment. The court has found in similar decisions that this did not rise to the level of persecution. So the focus, even if it went back to the immigration judge, the focus would still be on whether or not he has a well-founded fear of future persecution. And there is nothing in the record whatsoever to suggest that somebody who just because of their participation in a Tiananmen Square protest would be subjected to any kind of abuse or arrest. And I would add, in addition to the severity issue, there's not a clear connection between why he was arrested and his political opinion. It appears, and he even admits, that the reason he was detained was because he was being pumped for information about the leaders of the group. And we don't know really why the government was looking for that information. It could have been for a legitimate prosecutorial purpose. So there's no clear connection.
What's the legitimate to prosecute the Tiananmen Square agitators?
There's an indication in the record of some disturbances connected with this particular protest, not Tiananmen Square, this other protest. And so there's insufficient clarity about the reason that he was actually detained and beaten for that period of time. So again, this would all go back to the question of, because there is no past persecution, what is his objective reason for fearing future persecution? And this is what the immigration judge was focusing on in his decision, in saying that we don't have anything to suggest that any harm is going to come to him if he goes back to China because of what happened back in 1989.
But the State Department report doesn't really help your argument, does it? Because it's not clear-cut in terms of what's going on in terms of China. Indeed, there's a reference that the government hasn't provided a credible accounting of what had happened in Tiananmen Square and suggests that there might be, clearly the suppression of the demonstrations and issues related to that.
Well, again, the only evidence in the State Department report that Mr. Huang is relying on is a mention of approximately 200 people who were participants in the Tiananmen Square protest who were still detained at the time of the report, which I believe was 2001. But that does not apply to Mr. Huang. He was not detained for that period of time. He was actually released, and that's another reason that his claim of future persecution is not consistent with the country condition reports, because he was actually released. He was detained for 30 days. But the fact that they released him is an indication that, okay, they either got what they wanted or they didn't get what they wanted, but they're no longer interested in him. And this was, I think, the point that the immigration judge was trying to make, perhaps inarticulately, that there was no corroborating evidence, there was nothing to support his claim that something would happen. That the basis of asylum is to keep somebody from having to go back to a situation of persecution. And that was the focus of the immigration judge's decision, not necessarily what happened in the past.
Is there any explanation for the 5-year delay in taking up his asylum application?
I'm sorry, for the what?
The 5-year delay. Wasn't there a lengthy delay in taking up his asylum application? He applied in 93.
Yeah. Nothing in the record to indicate what the reason for the delay was, but I do know from personal experience that was a period of time where there was a pretty excessive backlog in immigration court hearings, asylum hearings, so I would assume. Also, I believe there were several continuances that were requested in this case for fingerprinting and to get documents, so that was another reason for the delay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Harrison.
This case does not deserve the deference that would ordinarily be warranted of a decision of the immigration court or the and/or the Board of Immigration Appeals. Now, let's assume arcendo in fact there was only one instance of persecution and or torture and or of a beating. Is there a magic number? How many times does it take for somebody to be killed, permanently injured, or something of that nature? As well, counsel makes an assumption about the credibility that the immigration judge lent to the petitioner's credibility. Well, that goes to the whole issue of misapplication of the corroboration rule, and it's contrary to this court's holding in Goncharova. Now, let's move on to whether or not a beating of this nature rises above what is called for in the Convention Against Torture, or METEV, or Bezuktowski. The point of the matter is that a beating in which a 15-year-old is bleeding from the forehead and the lower jaw definitely rises above mere harassment. Okay, and then let me just sort of summarize counsel's argument. I believe that he is splitting hairs with lives, with livelihood,
well,
and
now,
the belief in political ideology.
We don't want to personalize this, Mr. Harrison. I mean, the government is obligated to defend these asylum decisions, and it certainly will be our task to see if your client should have a new hearing. But
I'm forewarned. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Okay, and as a matter of, in terms of whether or not he can expect future persecution where he returned back to China, what would he be returning back to? I believe that he'd be returning back to a future of persecution. The country reports on the human rights practices in China 2001 state that persecution of participants, believers, and activists in Tiananmen Square persists to this day, and there is not an accounting for people who are missing as well. A lot of people are being economically as well as politically oppressed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.